The Grammy and Emmy Award-winning Trisha Yearwood is back with a whole lot of things going on. There's the recently released deluxe version of her 2019 album Every Girl, which came out in August. And then there's the new season of her Food Network show, Trisha's Southern Cooking, which kicked off a new season last Saturday. And now a new cookbook, her fourth. This one is all about comfort food with those that make us most comfortable, family and friends. Whether it's breakfast winners like her pecan sticky buns with bacon caramel, not without, with bacon caramel, and a dish called Eggs in Purgatory, or Nashville hot chicken meatball sliders, or an elegant ricotta tartlet with cherry tomatoes, and then there's this dessert whose name is, quote, Uncle Wilson's ice cream thing. Trisha gives you classic and inventive recipes. She offers meals to eat while you make memories with those you love. Trisha's Kitchen, easy comfort food for family and friends, is available today, and I am so happy to have Trisha Yearwood on the show. Hi, Trisha.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. So you begin this book with a story about you sitting in Maya Angelou's kitchen in 1998, watching her fry catfish with cornmeal, and you write, I knew I was in the school of Maya, and I didn't want to miss a lesson. What did you learn that day from Maya Angelou when she invited you to lunch? And then how do we see it in this book?
Well, first of all, you know, you're blown away that she's called, that we were on tour, and I was on tour with Garth, and got the call that she would like to invite me to lunch. And I thought, this must be a mistake. Like, she's probably, you know, asking for Garth, or someone's messing with me, you know. And that, no, she would like you to come. And so I went, of course. And what was really amazing was it started out as, you know, her telling me that there was a particular song called Walk Away Joe that she liked. And we talked about lyric and about melody and, you know, rhythm and everything. And it was really incredible. But then as we're chatting, she starts making lunch, and I just am watching her, you know, bread the fish and heat the oil. And it was just, this was before I had a cooking show, but I just watched her prepare the meal and just the love and care. And I just realized I was having an experience that I didn't want to ever forget, you know, and it kind of slowed me down a little bit to remind me of the important connection between us as humans and food, and how important it is to gather and to share something that we love with somebody else. It was really a life-changing experience.
You also mentioned your mom was the ultimate home cook. And so in your mind, what does that mean to be a home cook? And what was her superpower as a home cook?
I think my mom's superpower was that she never got ruffled. You know, she never had, I never saw her stressed if she was cooking for us as a family, or if she was making the wedding cake for the small town. You know, somebody was having a wedding and she had to make a 5-tier wedding cake, which she did beautifully. She just never stressed. It was like she just was confident in her ability, and she was able to balance all of it. She had a job. She was a school teacher, so she went to work every day. She had a meal on the table at 6 o'clock, and she found time to play with her children and laugh and enjoy her life. And she always taught me to just not stress over the food. If something didn't turn out right, there was almost always a way to fix it. And she just, I think she instilled that in me.
So we've talked about Maya Angelou. We've talked about your mom. Let's get another person in here. Julia Child, who you write was a culinary role model. So we're about the same vintage. So when you turned on the TV to watch cooking, it was Julia Child. That was the thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I loved her. I just was fascinated by her. And now that I'm an adult and really know her whole history, I really am fascinated by her. But she was also like that. You know, there's a famous clip of her flipping a potato pancake and some of it falling out of the pan. And she puts it back in the pan and she says, "You're in the kitchen alone. Who's to know?" And I'm thinking it's so funny because she's on national television. You know? But she was really the first look into watching somebody else do it. And she was the ultimate home cook. And I think, you know, I would love to go to culinary school, and that's a goal of mine at some point, just because I want to know all the stuff that I don't know. But I also have learned the value of it being okay to just know what you know and know that well. And I learned that from my mom and my grandmother and my dad. He was a really good cook too. And Julia Child.
My guest is Trisha Yearwood. The name of her new cookbook is Trisha's Kitchen, Easy Comfort Food for Friends and Family. It's out today. So when you're taking family recipes, it's often kind of hard because grandma or auntie will just say a pinch of this, you throw a little bit of that in there, but you have to make a recipe and put it in a book for us civilians to follow. What was that process like?
Well, in the very first book, especially, a lot of the family recipes that my mom made were things that were not written down. And I remember vividly her cornbread dressing for Thanksgiving was my grandmother's recipe. And I said, this has got to go in the book, you know, because everybody needs to know how to make it. And she said, well, I don't really have a recipe. And I said, well, Mom, like, you have to, you know, measure. We have to make this and measure it and make sure. And so she did. Anything that wasn't written down, she took the time to meticulously measure and make sure that it was the way that it was supposed to be. And now my mom has been gone for 10 years. And so I'm so grateful to have those recipes that she wrote down. They would be out in the ether if I didn't have that. And now, even now, my sister and I have discovered a few recipes that we thought were lost forever. And we had to just kind of, you know, channel them and go, okay, we're going to make this and try to figure it out. And, you know, because sometimes it just says butter and you got to figure out, well, how much butter? And that's actually been kind of a fun challenge for us to go back and perfect some of these recipes that are in our family that we thought were lost.
You have a couple of recipes whose family members, they end up in the title, Uncle Wilson's Ice Cream Thing. That cracked me up. Grandma Yearwood's $100 Cupcakes with Caramel Icing. Okay, the first part of the question is, when you were looking at these recipes of your family, what was something that you noticed about the way your family cooks?
Well, I mean, coming from the Southern tradition, especially on my mom's side, Uncle Wilson is my mom's brother. It's very South Georgia, you know, very much, you know, they grew up on a working farm, so lots of fresh vegetables. And even though there were a lot of things that were deep fried, there was almost always a balanced meal on the table because there were a lot of vegetables. And so that's definitely a thing in our family. The Uncle Wilson's ice cream thing is funny because I kept from putting it in a book because it's really not a homemade dish. It's like ice cream sandwiches and you layer this with nuts and and it's like, well, it's not really like a recipe, but he made it all the time for summer. And that's what its name was. It's like, it's, you know, do you want Uncle Wilson to make ice cream thing? And I'm like, we have to just leave the name because that's what it is in our family.
It is a family affair. Your husband, Garth Brooks, wrote the foreword to the cookbook, and it's really a lovely tribute to you and what your cooking means for the family. And there are recipes in here with his name on them. But is he really loud in the kitchen?
He really is, and he's actually good. he's not, I will say that he's not maybe as good as he thinks he is, but he will. Because, like, if he makes a sandwich, he'll take a picture of it because he thinks it's the most incredible thing that's ever been made in the history of the sandwich. But he's the whatever it takes guy, so he really is good at taking direction. And if I need him to help, or if he makes a couple of things that are signature Garth things, like a pasta salad, and he makes a breakfast bowl, those are his. And like, in this book, Garth's breakfast lasagna is his because he challenged me to make it. He said, can you make a lasagna that's a really... really like a real true lasagna, but it's all breakfast foods, everything you would have for breakfast, and not just a breakfast casserole. And I'm like, yeah, let's give it a shot. And he really helped me figure out and tweak and taste and see what it needed and what it didn't need. So that recipe is his. I mean, that was really, you know, created out of his inspiration.
There's also a recipe in here for these Czech pastries that have a peach filling.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
These are so, I mean, I remember I went to Prague a million years ago, and these are so delicious. How did Garth come to introduce, he's from Oklahoma, right? How did he come to introduce these to you?
He asked me if, because, okay, a backstory is my sister moved to Nashville, bought a place, is building a house. It's my dream come true to have my sister be my neighbor, but there's a small peach orchard on this property, and so we had so many peaches that there's a lot of peach recipes in the book. And we're like trying to think of like, what else can we put peaches in, you know? And Garth said, what about, could you make kolaches? And I'm like, what is that? Like, I have no idea what that is. And he's like, I had it my whole life in my childhood. And so when I looked it up, I said, these are Czechoslovakian. Like, how did you have kolaches in Oklahoma? And there was a large Czech population in the area. And they had a festival every year. And he would eat these kolaches. And so it's really like a cousin to a Danish, mm-hmm. And about letting the dough rise and then, you know, and then filling them with whatever you want to fill them with. And I agree. Like, I mean, this was an experiment for me, and I'm so glad that he brought this to my attention because they're super good. And we We used peach filling on those, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, you can find them in little parts of Texas, too. That's the first place I ever had them before Prague. But they're delicious, and they're cute, for lack of a better word.
They're not hard to make. You just have to have the patience to let the dough, you know, rise. And actually, there's a photograph of them in the book, but it's a very small, like, looks like a Polaroid, because we didn't even photograph them for the book. That was the picture I took out of the oven on my iPhone that ended up making the book.
But, you know, it's interesting. It brings me to a question I wanted to ask about when you're on tour. So, you know, Garth told you about this little special thing in his part of the world, and you get to go to all kinds of places. Are you able to, you know, put on a baseball hat and a sweatshirt and go check out food when you're on tour in different parts of the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's become a little different. It's really strange, you know, as a singer and an artist traveling and touring, there was a recognition factor that was great. You know, people know who you are and it's cool. But the cooking show has changed things so much, because even if people see me and they don't think it's me when they hear me talk because of the show, I think they're like, oh, I thought it might be you. And then when I heard you talk, I'm like, that's Tricia. So, but the cool thing too is in our world, in country music world, people are just friendly. They just want to tell you they like your music, or they want to ask you about a recipe. And also sometimes you put on a ball cap and go out and nobody knows, nobody recognizes you. And sometimes they all do. So you just kind of live your life. And sometimes it takes a little longer to get to the grocery store than others.
Is there anything you've picked up from those trips out on tour that you've been able to bring back and make your own? Something you had ate in a diner or at a home cooking spot on the road?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things in this book that are definitely came from having something on the road and then coming home and going, I got to figure out how to make that. And that's been a fun part of creating new recipes, since, you know, we do have a lot of family recipes in here, but we also I've done three books. So I've got to draw from new experiences too. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard of burnt ends brisket until we played Kansas City. And there's a famous restaurant there that has barbecue burnt ends. And the history was that it used to be the part of the brisket that was cut off because it was kind of crispy and thrown away. And this place was so popular that people would wait in line for sandwiches. And so they would start to give them the little burnt ends to keep them satisfied till they got to the counter to get their sandwich. And people loved them so much, it became a thing. And so I'm like, we can make barbecue burnt ends. We're going to figure that out. So we did that in the book. And so I think it's really been fun to travel around and try different things. And the thing that's different is I'm a Southern girl, so my food maybe has that spin, but comfort food is not. Comfort food is everywhere. Everybody has that thing that they make that they love, that their mother made or their grandparents make, that brings them comfort. So comfort food is really whatever that is for you.
My guest is Tricia Yearwood. The name of the cookbook is Tricia's Kitchen, Easy Comfort Food for Friends and Family. So you have a whole section on breakfast. Of these recipes, Tricia, which one would you like someone to make for you for breakfast in bed?
I love the breakfast burger, because it has maple pork mixed with ground beef, and it's a burger, so it's hearty. It's on a French toast bun. It has avocado and a maple butter drizzle, and it is everything that I would ever want for breakfast. That's all I want.
You mentioned bacon. There's an entire essay dedicated to bacon in the breakfast section. You describe it as an entire food group for the family. All right. So what can you give us two or three tips for making good bacon?
Yeah. And you know, I grew up where if we were going to have bacon, my mom would fry it in a skillet. And that's what I do. And then you've got issues with, like, it's popping everywhere and bacon grease gets all over your kitchen. And it's like, it's just a pain. So I started just the way I use bacon differently. So if I'm going to use it on a sandwich, or if I'm going to bake it, if I'm going to use it for something where I want a flat piece, I bake it. And I'll almost always bake it, because you can put it on a sheet pan and it doesn't splatter, and it's perfectly flat for sandwiches, and you can make it as crispy or as tender as you like. That's my favorite way to do bacon. And then so a friend of mine, her name's Lori, we were talking about recipes, and it had crumbled bacon in it. And my whole life I've fried the bacon in the skillet and then burned my hands while I'm crumbling it and getting them greasy. And she just took kitchen shears and chopped the bacon up into the pieces before she cooked it. And so it was like, that's genius. And then it's done. And then I started, when I do fry it in a pan on the stovetop, I use a tall pot. I don't use a skillet. I use a tall pot so it doesn't get all over the kitchen counter. So just little things like that. As I learn them, I pass them along.
I love that about the tall pot. And I was so excited to see that you talk about saving bacon fat. And I don't know if it's a Georgia thing. My grandmother was from LaGrange, Georgia, by way of Washington, D.C. And my mom always saved the bacon fat. And it was always kind of like a little bit gross, to be honest, on the front of the table, you know.
Right.
But now if you go to like Sur La Table or Williams Sonoma, they have these like elegant little bacon fat jars. And it makes me laugh every time I see it. Can you tell?
I know, it's really funny.
Isn't
it
funny?
I can tell. It is funny. And my mother stored it at room temperature in an old coffee can, mm-hmm. and it was sat above the stovetop. And she strained it because that's what keeps it from going bad, is like you have to strain any bits of anything you cooked out of it when you put it in the coffee can. But then a few years ago, I was doing the cooking show, and Ree Drummond came to visit, and she brought me bacon fat as a gift, which I think is a very Southern thing. And I'm like, that is great. And she refrigerated hers. And I thought, well, that makes me feel a little better about it. But you can also now buy bacon drippings commercially in a little carton that are completely clean and not, you know, so if you feel gross about it, you can buy them. There's just a flavor and a texture that comes from using bacon drippings, that you just don't get other places. You mentioned when you were opening the show about the pecan sticky buns, there's bacon drippings in the, also in the batter, in the dough. And so it's like, it just really adds something special to a dish.
Preach on the bacon drippings. My guest is Tricia Yearwood. Her cookbook is called Tricia's Kitchen, Easy Comfort Food for Friends and Family. We'll have more with Tricia after the break. We'll talk about veggies, collard greens, as well as biscuits. Stay with us. This is All of It on WNYC. My guest is Tricia Yearwood. The new cookbook's called Tricia's Kitchen, Easy Comfort Food for Friends and Family. So we talked a lot about bacon. Let's talk about vegetables. I understand you have a veggie night in your house. What goes down during veggie night?
Well, when Garth and I were raising the girls, they, you know, just trying to get more vegetables into your diet. When I was a kid, we had a garden, so vegetables were like, you just a no-brainer. You had them every night. And so we just created this thing called Veggie Night where the girls could request any vegetable they liked, but that's what we had. I did draw them to the table with mashed potatoes, telling them that, you know, potatoes are a vegetable, and so mashed potatoes count, and they would eat anything with mashed potatoes. So they loved roasted carrots. They loved green beans and cabbage. I mean, they were game. I was really proud of them. So that was usually our Veggie Night. Sometimes Veggie Night with Garth included meatloaf, which is not a vegetable, but, you know, it's Garth. So sometimes he got meatloaf, but it was usually Veggie Night, and it was cool. Garth and I learned that, you know, it was important to have that time around the table, and I think it's time that people, you know, forget to do when everybody's really busy. And there are a lot of really great conversations that happen around that table and things that we learned about them and that they probably learned about us that we wouldn't have had if we wouldn't have created that meal.
Let's talk about collard greens, because this could be controversial, Tricia, on page 95, what you've done to some collard greens. You have made collard greens stuffed wontons. Explain yourself.
It's going to change your life. Okay, I'll explain myself. Okay. First of all, I was looking for a way to cook collard greens more quickly and efficiently, because they take forever and they smell up the house forever. And so, you know, I'm like, there's got to be some kind of a way to do it in a pressure cooker or an Instant Pot. And so I did that. And so then I had this, you know, excess of really good, well-cooked collard greens. And it just so happened that a friend of mine was telling me about having some kind of a fried collard green situation in a restaurant somewhere in Florida. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to figure this out. And so I actually tasked my team on the show. I said, well, you got to help me figure this out, because I really want to do this for the book. I want to figure out how to make these. And we just kind of worked on it. We just kind of, you know, took our leftover, you know, used our collard greens from the other recipe, which is also in the book, and added some cream cheese and some other things. And then we you know, wonton wrappers you just buy at the store. They're super easy to put together. And then made it like a sweet dipping sauce. And my husband is not a Georgia guy. He's not a collard green guy. And he walked in when my sister and I were testing these recipes. And he walked in and I said, you got to try this. And he just popped it in his mouth and he ate all of them. And then I told him that he'd eaten collard greens. And he was like, oh, well, that's not bad.
Pass the Garth test on that one. How about we talk about biscuits. Everybody's got a special way they make their biscuits. Everybody's grandmother has something very specific about their biscuits. What's special about the biscuits in this book?
I think it's my dad made a very simple biscuit. I do a biscuit that you don't have to roll out and cut, that are just really like a drop biscuit. Mm-hmm. But my grandma used to make what my grandfather called cat head biscuits, because he said that the top of them, they were as big as a cat's head. I don't know. These are the family stories. But she would make them in a skillet. And the secret to a biscuit being a really high, fluffy biscuit is not handling the dough very much. And also, if the biscuits are touching in the pan, they tend to help each other rise more. So she'd make these biscuits and they just come out of the pan. They were so big. And for dessert, the way he would take one of those huge biscuits and poke a hole in the center and pour honey in it. That was his dessert. And so for me, that's just a memory for me of being a little kid and seeing these biscuits that seemed like they were just mile high biscuits. But my grandma said, you know, you're rolling these out with my hand. You're putting this dough together. She wouldn't even use a rolling pan. She would just mash the dough out with her hands just to try to handle it as little as possible to give you the most tender, fluffy biscuit.
There's something in the book you have a recipe for, and I'm not sure how to say it. It looks like a grape is what it is. But is it muscadine? Muscadine?
Muscadine, yes.
Muscadine jam. So tell folks what a muscadine is and what it tastes like and what you do with it.
Sometimes you will hear them called scuppernongs, and they're a wild grape. That, well, I guess all grapes are wild, but they're like, they grew in the woods in where I grew up, and they're super sweet. I always say they're like a grape on steroids. They're so sweet. They're amazing. And you'll find muscadine or scuppernong wine. You can find in the book, we make the jam, but we also make, one of my mom's old recipes for a scuppernong muscadine. I don't know which one I called it, because it's different about what the color of the grape is. It's basically the same thing. It's a pie, and it basically tastes like a deep, rich grape pie. It was so grapey to me that I made a peanut butter drizzle to go over the pie. But it's by themselves, they have seeds, and their flesh is kind of gooey. It's kind of, I don't want to say what they kind of resembles, but it's kind of snotty. It's kind of slick. Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of gross, Allison, but if you can go with the bacon fat, you can go with the muscadine. It's so sweet and so good. And then you just spit the seeds out.
Before I let you go, I do want you know, we often talk about food on the show and restaurants and all, but it's really important to talk about the issue of food insecurity as well. And I know that's something that you work with the Nashville Food Project. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, living in Nashville, I've been here for 35 years now, and I had heard about the Nashville Food Project through a friend of mine. Actually, she's a daughter of a songwriter that, you know, small big town that I knew, that she was running this organization. And I love them because they help the community in so many ways. They have a kitchen where you can go and volunteer and cook. I'm scared to cook for like 200 people, but I'm not afraid to chop a vegetable. So I like to work in the kitchen where it's like, I like to do all the prep stuff, and I like delivery too, because that's fun to get to see folks. But like, for instance, there's a church that's really a community center, where people every Wednesday night know they can go have a meal, and that Nashville Food Project is going to provide that meal. And that's sourced from, gardens, and a lot of the gardens are set up by the Nashville Food Project, by refugees who have come to this country and they can't get you know, they were top of their game and wherever they came from, but they can't get a job here because of the language barrier or because they don't have the certain skill set. But they were really great at growing their garden, and so now they have a place that they can feel important, and they can feel, you know, we all need to feel like what we're doing is worthwhile, and to give you back your self-esteem, and they're growing these incredible gardens. The food is sourced from there. Also, from, you know, overage, like, I guess there's a big beef convention that comes to Nashville, and they have all this beef, and when the convention's over, it's still good. And so they get donated a lot of things. So it's almost like a gourmet meal, for people who need it. And, there's a lot of great organizations like that in this town, but I'm kind of partial to the Nashville Food Project.
The name of the book is Trisha's Kitchen, Easy Comfort Food for Friends and Family. Trisha, thanks for spending so much time with us.
Thank you, Allison. I enjoyed myself.